Victory or death!
Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Reardon, the voice of freedom behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, bringing you, the Patriots, the information you need to stay in the fight to preserve your liberty. This is episode 22-25, and I think it's around the 115th episode of all time. And I think next year what I'm going to do is just do episode number. So if it's the 120th, it's the 120th, whatever the episode is, that's what I'm going to do starting next year. But for now, I'll just keep the format going here. I don't know, we'll see. There's a lot going on. I'm going to talk mostly about things in the news and things that are happening that affect you. And if I have time, I'll get to what I've been doing with the lesser magistrates and the Soviet life. But there's a lot to talk about, a lot of stuff I've come across that I think you really need to know about and might find interesting. So that's what I'm going to do today. I'd like to thank ActiCare of the Blue Ridge for sponsoring the segment of the show. ActiCare is in-home senior care for your senior loved one if you can't be there. ACTIKARE.com/Blue-Ridge. And get in touch with John and his team. If you're in Bedford, Smith Mountain Lake, Roanoke, out in the country, Campbell County, Lynchburg, Amherst, get in touch with them and they'll take good care of your family member if you can't be there during the day or night. First thing I want to talk about is an email I got from AEP. That's Appalachian Power. And think about California. Think about the news story you heard about in California. You should have heard about this, but I'll reference it in a second here. So join Appalachian Power, bring your own thermostat program today and receive a $50 e-gift card just for joining. The BYOT program allows Appalachian Power to make brief adjustments to your thermostat during times of peak demand. There's an asterisk here. It says, events typically occur on the hottest days of summer. Most events take place in the afternoon hours and will never occur on weekends or holidays. How are we going to charge all of these new electric vehicles if there's issues with providing enough electricity? They did this in California, remember? Oh, and they didn't tell people where they're going to do it. Or maybe they did. That's the thing, like this, where there's a little asterisk somewhere. Oh, enroll in the program, get a gift card. And then you get the gift card and it's like, oh, wait a minute, why is my thermostat set 10 degrees hotter than it was, or 15 or 20 degrees hotter than it was when I left the house? And well, that's why. Well, let's continue. Cooling season runs May through September each year. And as a reward for participating in our program, you will receive another e-gift card at the end of each program season for the months you were enrolled, up to $25 a year. This is your last chance to earn $5 for participating in September, so hurry and enroll your thermostat today, sucker. This is a terrible idea. Do not do this. I can tell you where this is going to head. This is going to head where one day it will be mandated by law that all new houses come with one of these things, and that by law it must be connected into this program. And there will be no $50 gift card. You're just going to have it and be enrolled in it. I will bet, though, if you were to turn off your internet during the day, just so you know, I'm going to get a little nerdy here for you. If every router pretty much has the ability, and that's what's giving you internet in your house, your Wi-Fi routers, every one of those, if you were to log into them, has the ability to block certain devices using parental controls and various other means during certain times of the day. It could be 24 hours a day. That this device does not have access to the internet. And if you did that, the chumps at AEP or whatever power company you're using, Dominion or whoever, would not be able to change your temperature. Just one way around it as things progress into this weird Orwellian world that we have found ourselves in. Four reasons why you should get a smart thermostat. There's not actually four things here, I don't think, but have you considered getting a smart thermostat but are not ready to take the plunge? Learn about the many benefits a smart thermostat can bring you and your family. You can also earn a $50 e-gift card. just for joining our BYOT program, and you can still earn $5 per participating this season. H to the no. No, no, no. N-O. No, I will not be doing that. Ever. Now, we'll never be doing that. Law or not, I will find a way around it. That's ridiculous. If I want my house hot, it'll be hot. If I want it cold, it'll be cold. And I will pay what I have to pay to do that. And, you know, you just have to provide the services. Stop creating perverse incentives for stupid things like electric cars and giving people credits and all this other junk for getting it. And creating more draw on electricity. I was like listening to some podcast, I think it was Nick Freitas, and he was talking about the power consumption of electric cars is something like a window air conditioning unit running all the time or something like that. It was interesting. But this is stupid. We don't have the capacity to do what we want to do with electricity in this country. And we're doing, and it's good. This is a perfect example. Well, you know, we need you to enroll in this program so we can turn your thermostat down because your house is running, you know, whatever. And then turning around with that same thing and saying, but you need to get an electric car. It's just moronic. I saw a great video about the Ford F-150 Lightning, which I wouldn't mind having an electric truck. That'd be great. Mileage on trucks sucks. He couldn't get 20 miles round trip and then go back for another trip when he was towing. That's how bad it is. Now, there's a solution to this. A nice little four-cylinder, small little four-cylinder engine inside of a truck, even a diesel one, nice small engine that could charge a system, make it a hybrid. You would have towing for days. Put a big 30-gallon tank in that sucker. It would go forever. But no, we're not going to do that. We're jumping straight to electric. We're not capable and ready for that. How's this electric working out for all those people in Florida in the aftermath of Hurricane Ian, where their cars were completely submerged? You know that you can rebuild and clean up and get back on the road a gas-powered car that was running and got submerged. You'll probably have a salvage title, but you can do it. It can be done. You're not with electric. You're just out of luck. Sucks. Especially if it's salt water that got in there. You know, if I was an enterprising young man looking to do the boat life, you can go back and listen to that episode if you want, where I talked about an article I found by Matt Bracken where he was recommending you go and buy a boat and fix it up and live on it in the boatyard, put it out on the sea, you know, buy a nice 40-footer, you know, fiberglass or steel hull and go live on the ocean. Well, there's lots of those now. I mean, it sucks. I'm not trying to make light of people's misery, but I'm saying if you're an enterprising young man and we're looking for that, well, it's an option now. There's lots of boats down there. So give it a couple months as the insurance companies sort it out, as they're stacked up like cordwood over in the boatyards, and I'll bet you could get a really nice boat. And I'll bet you could get some really good secondhand hardware like radar, radios, and all kinds of other cool stuff that wasn't damaged and that you can get for pretty cheap. I mean, there's good salvage opportunities down there. So something to think about. If I was single, oh, I would do that in a second. Absolutely. Next, let's talk about preparedness, specifically food preparedness, but, you know, in general. There's a guy named Bob Snow, really nice guy, up in Louisa County. And this is from his newsletter, and I'll give you the website at the end of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I will post the whole thing on the show notes at radiofreevirginia.com, but the handwriting is on the wall, it's titled. Not only is it on the wall, but the TV, radio, newspapers, and so on. Most of all, it's on our heart and mind. I believe this warning comes from God. He knows what's going to happen and is trying to warn all of us, his children, to come up to the up-and-coming calamities. I know that he loves each of us and is actively engaged to help us prepare physically and spiritually. Recently, I wrote that we are the watchmen on the tower. Warn your family, friends, and those you care about that the enemy is upon us. Take a look at this. And I'm not going to read all these. I'll skip around. But they're all pretty much saying the same thing. And it's a lot about crops and food specifically. The hard red winter wheat crop in the United States this year was the smallest since 1963. But in 1963, there were only 182 million people living in this nation. Today, our population has grown to 329 million. Number two, it is being projected that the rice harvest in California will be half what it would be in a normal year. Half, 50%. The U.S. tomato harvest will come in at just 10.5 million tons in 2022. That's over a million tons lower than a normal year. I saw this year locally. There's a guy on 221 that puts tomatoes out in a bag. It's a big 4-pound bag for $5. It's a smoking deal. And he didn't raise his prices with inflation. But he almost never had tomatoes. And one time I stopped and I was able to get some because he had them. He said, "This is the last batch." And I said, "Yeah, I noticed that things seem to be smaller this year. There's just not as many tomatoes." He said, "Yeah, they just weren't growing." And then I have found a few other stands that people put out in their front yard kind of a thing. And I would stop and get some from them. But there were less tomatoes this year. So that will impact lots of things. There's a lot more of these. I will skip on ahead. One beef producer in Oklahoma is now predicting that ground beef could eventually top $50 per pound. It says, "We are being warned that there will be crop losses in France up to 35%. It's being projected that crop losses in some areas of the UK could be as high as 50%. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has publicly stated that he believes that it is likely there will be multiple famines in 2023, and this will cause civil unrest. This one's really interesting. So some of you have seen the news about flooding in Pakistan. It's the monsoon season over there. Well, it's real bad. A third of the entire nation of Pakistan was underwater after recent floods absolutely devastated that nation, and agricultural areas were hit particularly hard. As a result, the vast majority of the crops in the country have been washed away. It has also been estimated that roughly 65% of the country's food basket, particularly crops like rice, cotton, wheat, and onion, have been washed away. Pakistan Foreign Minister, in an interview to CGTN earlier this week, offered an even starker outlook by saying that about 80 to 90% of the country's crops have been damaged by the floods. 80 to 90%. That's just one country. You know, a lot of these countries are exporters. Well, not that country this year. Pakistan's in a mess right now. Pakistan's kind of going where Sri Lanka went earlier this year. I mean, just their economy's falling apart. Their crops are a disaster. I mean, it's not good. Blinken recently told them, "We're not going to give you any help. Go pound sand." I heard that over on Sam Culper's daily intelligence brief, and it was interesting. It's an interesting conversation they were having. But yeah, a lot of bad things happening in the world, essentially. So he continues, he says, "In recent weeks, we've seen absolute massive protests in cities all over the planet, but conditions aren't even that bad yet. So what will things be like in 2023 when it finally becomes exceedingly clear that there will simply not be enough food for everyone? If everything you have read in this article sounds familiar, that is because we have been warned for years that such conditions were coming. 2023, there will be famines and civil unrest all over the globe. This is not a drill. An extremely serious global food crisis has already begun, and I would encourage you to get prepared for what is ahead while you still can. And his website is eastcoastpreppers.com. It's drivable from anywhere in Virginia, eastcoastpreppers.com. He does classes, and it's really a good place to go to get that start. You go, "Well, what should I do?" And don't even go with the plan to buy anything, although he sells some really good stuff. It's not just the prepper things. You know, he sells dehydrated and freeze-dried items such as strawberries and oranges and other things that, you know, people like, bananas. And they're really good. It's really good food. He doesn't sell that junk. Wise Foods, don't buy anything from them if they're even still in business. They're the worst. I just can't stand them. If you're going to buy something, buy a Mountain House or Backpacker's Pantry or things like that. But actually, as I talked about before, I would start with preparing by buying more than what you already buy. So if you buy 2 jars of tomato sauce in a week, buy 3 or 4. And then very shortly, you'll have an extra month's supply of food. So if a hurricane comes, or if power outages, or financial calamity, or whatever, you'll have at least a month of food that you can help your family with and help others with, and maybe help yourself. So something to think about. You know, I don't want you to live in fear, but I think that it's possible stuff's coming. It's hard to say, you know. You know, there's two things that are going on here. We have the the globalists, you know, the deep state, whatever you want to call them, the elite, they're doing their little puppet master things. But there's also this thing called the grand solar minimus, and that is a time of minimum solar output where the sun isn't putting out as much energy as it once was, or not once was, but it's a cycle. And if you have a grand solar minimus, you're going to see crop returns like this. Jefferson wrote about this back, you know, in his journals about Monticello and the crops. It was happening back then. This happens. These are big cycles. And this storm that just hit Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis was saying it's like a 500-year storm. And I would agree with that. And these storms are what they are. And people have built these mammoth places next to the ocean where hurricanes come. And stuff happens. You know, I was thinking, what would I do if I lived down there? Well, I'll tell you what I would do. If I could afford to live down there, I could afford a big garage. If I could afford a big garage, what I would do is put multiple lifts in there. And if I had to bug out, I'd put all my vehicles I couldn't take with me and anything up as high as I could put it up on the lifts. You know, most of the water didn't come up but 6 to 8 feet. So if you could have your car up there, it's probably only be touching your wheels. Might be good. So I don't know. That's what I would do. But I don't live down there. I'm not rich yet. Maybe someday I'll have a nice house in Florida. Next up, let's talk about the Second Amendment. Specifically, let's talk about the pistol brace ban. Essentially, it's a ban. I'm going to share with you audio from a video by a guy named Colleon Noir, and he is a attorney. He is a Second Amendment activist, lives out in California. Pretty cool guy. And I thought his was clear and concise and straightforward. And then I'll make some commentary on it.
All right, listen up. Because a lot of people could possibly turn into felons without even realizing it. And as the government likes to say, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Many of you watching this video are either first-time gun owners or you've bought a few guns, but you're still pretty new to the gun world and gun ownership and all that comes with it. Unfortunately, one of the things that comes with being a gun owner is being aware of what the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agencies, also known as the ATF, is doing. Many of you own guns that have what is called a brace on them. The brace looks something like this, 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 or this, or something similar. These braces are designed to make it easier for people who are disabled to shoot their guns accurately, which, last I checked, being able to shoot your gun accurately is a good thing. And it just so happened that the brace also helped people who weren't disabled shoot their guns more accurately. When the brace was initially released, the ATF said it was okay, but then they changed their mind when they realized that it also helped people who weren't disabled. And now they want to force everyone who owns a brace to register that brace. Keep in mind that there are an estimated 10 to 40 million of these braces owned by citizens who passed a background check in order to have the guns that they have with the braces on them. The ATF is not a lawmaking entity. They're not allowed to make laws, but they try to get away with making laws by calling them rules. Recently, a document that I don't believe they meant to get out got out, where in reference to the new rule that they're likely gonna try to release in December about the braces, said this: due to the upcoming amnesty registration of pistol brace weapons, photos of the weapon being registered will be required to prove that the weapon does utilize a pistol brace in its configuration and would qualify for amnesty registration. In short, they're going to give people an amnesty period so that they can register their guns with the government that have braces on them. But there are a couple of problems. You see, amnesty implies that there was a law that you were aware of, but you broke it anyway, but the government is gonna let you slide. But when the millions of people bought their braces, they weren't illegal to buy or own, and there wasn't a law requiring them to be registered to the government. Now the ATF is trying to retroactively pass a law disguised as a rule that would make you a felon if you didn't register your brace within their amnesty period. Don't get it confused. This isn't a grandfather clause that says that the law masquerading as a rule will only apply to new purchases of braces and all previous braces are okay. No, they're trying to say, we know it was legal before, but now it's not, so we're gonna hold you accountable for something you did in the past that was legal when you did it. So I know right now you're wondering, okay, So what the hell can I do about it? Well, midterm elections are coming up in November. So there are a few things you can do. One, vote for candidates who are pro-2A during the midterm elections. If the majority of Congress is held by pro-2A politicians, the ATF won't have the leverage it does to pass these types of fake laws. The next thing you can do is get in contact with your representatives in Congress and tell them to push back against the ATF's attempt to pass this unconstitutional law that they're masking as a rule change. You'll be surprised to learn that a lot of representatives don't even know about this, so put it in front of them. Don't underestimate the power of your voices. It's worked before and it'll work again if we're vigilant about getting this issue in front of them.
All right, so I can neither confirm nor deny that I have a pistol-braced AR. However, I can say that if I did have one of those, I would not be registering anything. Here's the thing about this, that what he said, and I agree with him, what he's saying in principle, that ignorance of the law is no excuse. This isn't law. No laws have been passed here. Regulatory bodies do not have the authority to make law. And if they argue that they have the regulatory authority to make law, they do not have the regulatory authority to make unconstitutional ex post facto law. That would be laws after the fact. You cannot make someone a criminal for something they did when it was lawful. And then they go, change their mind. It's illegal now. Well, okay. Well, then I'm grandfathered. You can't do it. But they're doing it. And I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm saying lawfully they can't do it. I'm tired of this game here. I'm not interested in participating and playing anymore with them. You want to see what happens when they start doing enforcement? Go for it, ATF. And if you're stupid enough to do this amnesty and register and worry about this, well, okay, dummy. That's on you. Don't come crying to us and the rest of us when they throw you in jail, they take everything, they have a record of you, whatever the bad thing is that you get out of this. There's nothing good for the Patriot out of any of this mess. So, you know, do what you want to do. But I'm not going to play anymore. I'm not interested. I think the ATF should be defunded. I think his advice was great. We need to vote for Second Amendment supporting representatives who will represent us and defund those scumbags. Take all their money away. Because you know what's happening right now? We are living in under perpetual continuing resolutions of funding the government. Perpetual. They're not doing budgets as they're constitutionally required to do. They're just continuing to extend the funding of the government. Well, there's a lot of power we have as conservatives in that. We could say, no. What do you mean, no? I mean, no. I mean, I'm not giving you any money. Stop being totalitarian jerks that expect us to lick your boot. We're not going to do it anymore. No more money for you. Real simple. We'll see if that happens. I don't know. But just something you should know about. If you have one of these and they come knocking on your door and they say, can we have a look at what you got? You say, I don't answer questions. Get off my property. They say, well, we really want to just clear some things up. We're just really looking out for, we're trying to square, you know, just sort this all out. You know, we don't really think you did anything wrong. They do think you did. They would not be knocking on your door if they didn't think that they're fishing. And they're trying to get you in trouble. The ATF and the FBI both should be disbanded. Next up is Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson is a psychologist. And he's going to... I'm going to share with you a clip about the Russia-Ukraine thing. And see. And then I'll make some thoughts and commentary on it. But I really like what he has to say here. And he's right.
Well, he's a lot more like everybody else than anyone thinks. You know, the notion that he's Hitler or Stalin, that's just foolish. I don't see any evidence for that at all.
How does this war end, do you think?
We're going to find out this winter. Well, I know what I would do in his shoes. Mm. I'd wait till the first cold snap and shut off the taps.
Right.
Well, because of course he's going to do that.
He's got the control over the energy.
Of course he's going to do that. He's already warned the West with his insistence that maintenance problems were necessary and the pipelines had to be shut down.
Do you think he will use a nuclear weapon?
If necessary, he'll use a tactical battlefield weapon.
Even if it starts World War III?
It won't. Probably.
Why? Because we wouldn't respond?
What's in it for us?
If you let him do it and get away with it, where does that end? Then you are into a hit analogy.
Well, there's a lot. You can get yourself in a situation, no problem, where there's no good outcome. Mm. We're trying to do that right now on every front we can possibly imagine. Mm. We can easily get ourselves in a situation where it's hell this way and hell that way. That's highly probable.
Well, should the Ukrainians give the Russians anything? When I was over there recently interviewing President Zelensky, what I was struck by was everybody I met in Kyiv, the capital city, were utterly resolute. Don't give them an inch of our land.
Yeah, well, I can't speak to that because I don't know what the preconditions for peace might be. But I do know that naive notions that the Russians are going to lose somehow, or that we're going to win, I just don't understand that. Well, what do you mean we're going to win? What are we going to win here exactly?
Well, I guess a victory would be that the Russians retreated from Ukraine.
With Ukraine in ruins.
Right.
Well, fine. That's a hell of a victory. Like, I think Putin could manage that because I think he could tell his people, and I think they might buy it. It's like, we accomplished our objective. We devastated Ukraine and we kept it out of the hands of the West. And that's not great. It's not what we had hoped for, but it's better than the alternative. And I think they would buy that. And I think when Putin went into Ukraine, I thought a bunch of things, which I made a YouTube video about that people criticized like mad. I thought, okay, well, what's happening here? Oh, I see. His end game for failure is that Ukraine is left in a smoking ruin. Mm. Oh, that's a victory. So then he can lose with impunity.
Right.
So how can we win? We can't win against Vladimir Putin anyways, because you cannot win against someone you cannot say no to. Period. And we can't say no to Putin because we sold our soul for his oil and gas. Mm. And we did that to elevate our moral stature in relationship to saving the planet. And so here we are, facing a very dire winter, hoisted on the petard of our own foolishness and moral presumption. Mm. We're saving the planet. We'll see. I don't think so. It doesn't look like it to me. And this is the most catastrophic issue here. Assuming that we're facing an environmental crisis of planetary proportions, which is not something I buy, by the way. Assuming we are, well, then I would imagine that you would put in place measures that would ameliorate that problem instead of exacerbating it. But all the measures you're putting in place are actually making the environmental problem worse. So how is that even vaguely acceptable? And I look at that and I think, oh, I see. It's just like George Orwell said about middle-class socialists 50 years ago. It's not that you love the planet. It's that you hate humanity. So, well, have at her, boys and girls, and we'll see what happens this winter. And it's very terrifying to me, especially here, you know, because your energy prices have gone way out of control, and that's going to hurt a lot of poor people, and certainly around the world as well. The World Bank already estimated that we've put 350 million people into what they call a food insecurity, 350 million. That's three times as many as the communists managed to kill. Maybe we can manage that in a winter. But the planet has too many people on it anyway, so, you know.
So, agree or disagree? I disagree that Putin is normal. I think something's wrong with the guy. But, again, I'm looking at this from my point of view about the things I've talked about in previous episodes regarding Ukraine and Russia and everything else. Now, a couple interesting things happened this week. The Nord Stream pipeline started leaking, and they had to shut it down. This is bad. I mean, this is an underwater thing. This isn't something you go, oh, no problem. You know, just go send a crew out and patch it. Bad for a couple of reasons. When you can't work on it until you essentially flush all the gas out. So you can't, and if you flush all the gas out and you depressurize the thing so you can work on it, salt water gets in there and wrecks it. So this is really bad. I imagine there's very smart people, much smarter than I, coming up with a solution for this. So this is a Russian pipeline, okay? So on Culper's intelligence report, he talked about this, and the guys said, look, there's three people that could have done this, three countries that have the technology to go underwater and break things, you know, pipelines, underwater cables, things like that. The United States, Great Britain, and Russia. Now, Russia has no incentive to do this because all they have to do, if they don't want to give gas and oil to Europe, is just to not give it to them. So they have no incentive to break their pipeline, because now that essentially puts them in a corner, because who's going to have to supply the gas now? Well, the United States, Great Britain, other countries, not Russia. So it's not something that Russia would have done themselves. And there's pretty good confidence intelligence-wise that this was sabotage, that someone broke this thing. It was probably us, but I don't know. We've got such incompetence at all levels of United States government and military right now. I'm talking about the leadership side, that I have a hard time believing that our military could pull this off and not get caught. They wouldn't screw it up somehow because of the idiots and the parameters that we've put upon them by idiots. So I kind of think that if anybody did it, it was the UK. That would make more sense, and that we asked them to, you know, so I don't know. But either way, you know, that's a problem for Europe, because winter's coming. And I think winter's coming quicker than it's ever come before. At least in the plus 10 years that I've lived in the South, it's just like, snap your fingers, it's almost here. And it's almost time to break out the coats and things. And usually that's not till mid-October. I mean, there have been October 31st, you know, when the kids were little and we walk out trick-or-treating, and I'd be in a t-shirt. Well, that's not going to happen this year, I don't think. I just don't think so. You know, maybe some of it's the weather patterns or hurricanes and what they do with, you know, jet streams and other things like that. But I don't know, we'll see. But back to Putin. What's the end game? I don't know. I think Jordan Peterson might be right about that. Is just to destroy Ukraine on the way out. And I go back to saying that this is not something I think that Putin ever intended to do. That this war was some elitist deep state thing, and whether it was the Chinese or the deep staters and them coming in, the elites, and saying, hey, listen, General so-and-so, Lenkov or whatever your name is, here's $1 billion, right? I know you'll get killed by Putin and never get to spend it, but here's $1 billion. If you send your guys in and get this thing started, you can have it. I think that's what happened. And Putin, because Russians don't like to lose face, didn't pull back, didn't say, oh, you know, that was a mistake, whoops. He's like, yeah, I meant to do that. There's a line from the movie The Sum of All Fears where the Russian guy just said, I ordered the attack, because he didn't want to appear weak. But he didn't order the attack. He did disappear the general. We've seen lots of generals going, you know, look at this from a standpoint of military effectiveness. The Russians are supposed to be the biggest and baddest next to us. It would be us, then it would be them, and then it would be maybe China. Now, China has zero proof in the battlefield, none, zero. They just don't have any. And Russia was supposed to be this big, bad, scary guy. And we're into October now, folks. And this guy, you know, he still hasn't taken Ukraine. This guy being, you know, Putin, the Russians, you know, he still hasn't taken Ukraine. Are you kidding me? We could have easily done it if it was us. I just, you know, we're a different animal. We have a great military because they have, we empower our soldiers from the lowest private to think for themselves and get the mission done. And they don't do that over there. And now they're drafting conscripts, calling up, you know, a bunch of people just, here, we're going to hand you a rusty rifle, go fight and kill Ukrainians. You'll see how that goes. About a year ago, maybe a little longer, did an episode. I'll link it to it in the show notes. You might really like it. There's some really good stuff in those. But it's about the Salus Scouts, and specifically the Rhodesian Light Infantry, and what the people of Rhodesia did to fight back against tyranny, and specifically terrorism sponsored by the Soviet Union being brought into their country. And they fought back, and these were tough dudes. I don't think the world has ever seen, including our guys, anybody as tough as these guys. You read stories about the stuff that they went through, the training they went through. I don't think the closest thing I could think would be maybe Navy SEALs, maybe Green Berets, Navy SEALs. But that would be the closest, because these guys were hardcore. So I want to share something, and it's called, this is from We Are the Mighty, 5 Reasons You Should Know About the Hardcore Salus Scouts. Green Berets, SEALs, MARSOC, these are all well-known operator groups in the United States military, but not many know about the Rhodesian Salus Scouts. Named after the famous hunter, Frederick Salus, they possess the teamwork mindset of the Rhodesian Light Infantry and the skills of the Rhodesian Special Air Service, but with harder training requirements than both. The Salus Scouts became monumental in anti-terrorist operations. There's some really, really good books. A Handful of Hard Men is where I would start. Really good. And it's audio form. You can get it at your library. There's another one, same author, called We Dared to Win, narrated by 2 different people. So I think you'd really enjoy those books. And I talk about those in the previous podcast where I talked about this. So, number one, rigorous selection process. 5 reasons you should know about the hardcore Salus Scouts. The selection process was so difficult that the recruits wouldn't believe the instructors when they were informed they had passed. The boot camp was named Wafa Wafa Wasara Wasara, which in Shona is for who dies, dies, who survives, survives. Extensive training. The Salus Scouts were raised as a special forces regiment when Rhodesia was facing a terrorist threat that was armed by the Soviet Union to eliminate many European colonies in Africa. The Scouts' mission was the clandestine elimination of these threats both in and out of Rhodesia. For this purpose, they were not only taught tracking and survival, but they were also trained by former terrorists in the language, songs, and mannerisms of their enemies, on top of learning to parachute. It's kind of like if you took the Army Rangers and the Navy SEALs and the Green Berets and you gave them all of that training and all of that selection. So they imagine going through Green Beret selection, and then once you got done with that, going through Navy SEAL selection, and then once you got done with that, going through Ranger selection. That's kind of, when you learn about these guys, that's the kind of stuff they went through. It's crazy. I mean, they would feed them. They would say, oh, yeah, here, this is dinner today. And it's like they drop a rotten baboon at their feet and they have to teach them how to cook rotten meat. It's insane. Expert survival skills. Salus Scouts were trained to hunt and forage for their own food and water supplies. Their survival skills allowed them to operate without external support. They could shoot targets in rapid succession without even looking. Trained to shoot well-known enemy hiding spots, they eventually became so skilled they no longer needed to look at their targets in order to hit them. That sounds a little ridiculous. Don't know how that's possible, but, you know, I guess if all you did was shoot, you could just point and shoot if you could be trained to be that good. Always outnumbered. Salus Scouts went out in 5 to 10-man teams, which meant they were always outnumbered against their enemies, but their training proved to be more efficient, allowing them to inflict a high number of casualties. They would also infiltrate enemy units just to eliminate them. After being trained by former terrorists, Salus Scouts were capable of infiltrating enemy terrorist units by joining their factions. So what they would do is they would go in, I'll keep reading here in a sec, but they would go in all dressed up in blackface. They would put this black makeup all over themselves at night. And they knew their mannerisms and how to walk and how to act. And they would infiltrate and then they would kill them all. These scouts would eventually turn on the terrorists, capitalizing on the element of surprise and shock to mitigate the cells. Other times, Salus Scouts would infiltrate enemy encampments and expose themselves by leaving clues behind of scout hiding places and encampments, ultimately leading the terrorist troops to death traps. So they would drop, you know, maybe a map that was to their supposed hiding place. And when this map would be found, the terrorists would go, hey, these guys were here. Let's go get them. But it was really a trap. So pretty awesome. While Rhodesia ultimately fell to the Zimbabwe African National Union, the Salus Scouts remain a monumental example in the world of anti-terrorist operations and helped write the book on being Operator AF. You know, should know what AF means. Really interesting history of these guys. I would love to have one on the show. If you are one or you know one, I would love to have one of these guys on the show. They fascinate me. I've been to Zimbabwe. So what was Rhodesia? Back in 1995, the exchange rate was 10 to 1 at the time. Not bad. And it wasn't 5 years later that they had completely destroyed their currency. The government had a bunch of communists. They just inflated it away, just printed money until it was worthless. And I've got some. The $100 trillion Zimbabwe note. Useless, worthless. They don't have a currency. This money no longer exists because their currency was so bad. They wrecked it so bad. They just deleted it, said it's done. And they use other foreign currency. The country's in tatters thanks to the communists. And as you, what you learn in listening to these books, and if you want to go back and listen to the podcast, kind of a summary of it, but they won the battles. They won the fighting. They won that. But they didn't win politically. They wanted to, you know, they played by the rules politically and the other side didn't. And that's what happened to Zimbabwe. I've got another segment of the show here. But I want to thank Adam Hopkins for sponsoring this segment. And Adam is a real estate broker in the Forest, Virginia area. Solid patriot. If you're looking for land, commercial property, a house, get in touch with him. He's got a fantastic team of real estate agents, and they'll take good care of you. You know, not just Forest, but it's Forest. It's Lynchburg, Amherst, Nelson, Pennsylvania, you know, almost out to Roanoke, you know, Bedford, Campbell County. So it's a pretty large area that his brokerage covers. So get in touch with him. Adam Hopkins, Hopkins.net. This next thing I'm going to share with you is audio from a video that's fantastically done. Really, really well done. And it's about mass psychosis, how an entire population becomes mentally ill. And this is the missing piece. This is what we've been trying to figure out. What is going on in America? What is going on in the world? This insanity that we see around us, where people, you can't believe what's right in front of your eyes, and you've got this cycle of up and down, fear, and back to normal, and fear, and back to normal, and fear, and back to normal. That's where we're at. But that interval between those is shrinking, getting smaller and smaller. And we have inflation. We got food insecurity. We've got all this energy crisis. We've got fires and famine and, you know, pandemic and everything. You know, it's like, it's always something, right? Well, this is really interesting. Talks a lot about it. Really well done. One of these like whiteboard looking ones, but they kind of really went the next level of animation. I think you'd really like the quality of it. They're on Instagram. After School, SKOOL is their YouTube channel. And I am going to link to this video. It's phenomenal. And I think really puts together what the heck is going on in the world right now. So have a listen to this.
The masses have never thirsted after truth. They turn aside from evidence that is not to their taste, preferring to deify error if error seduce them. Whoever can supply them with illusions is easily their master. Whoever attempts to destroy their illusions is always their victim. According to the psychologist Carl Jung, the greatest threat to civilization lies not with the forces of nature, nor with any physical disease, but with our inability to deal with the forces of our own psyche. We are our own worst enemies, or as the Latin proverb puts it, man is a wolf to man. In Civilization in Transition, Jung states that this proverb is a sad yet eternal truism, and our wolf-like tendencies come most prominently into play at those times of history when mental illness becomes the norm rather than the exception in a society, a situation which Jung termed a psychic epidemic. Indeed, it is becoming ever more obvious, he writes, that it is not famine, not earthquakes, not microbes, not cancer, but man himself, who is man's greatest danger to man. for the simple reason that there is no adequate protection against psychic epidemics, which are infinitely more devastating than the worst of natural catastrophes. In this video, we are going to explore the most dangerous of all psychic epidemics, the mass psychosis. A mass psychosis is an epidemic of madness, and it occurs when a large portion of a society loses touch with reality and descends into delusions. Such a phenomenon is not a thing of fiction. Two examples of mass psychoses are the American and European witch hunts of the 16th and 17th centuries, and the rise of totalitarianism in the 20th century. During the witch hunts, thousands of individuals, mostly women, were killed, not for any crimes they committed, but because they became the scapegoats of societies gone mad. In some Swiss villages, writes Francis Hill, there were scarcely any women left alive after the frenzy had finally burned itself out. When a mass psychosis occurs, the results are devastating. Jung studied this phenomenon and wrote that the individuals who make up the infected society become morally and spiritually inferior. They sink unconsciously to an inferior intellectual level. They become more unreasonable, irresponsible, emotional, erratic, and unreliable. And worst of all, crimes the individual alone could never stand are freely committed by the group smitten by madness. What makes matters worse is that those suffering from a mass psychosis are unaware of what is occurring. For just as an individual gone mad cannot step out of his mind to observe the errors in his ways, so too there is no Archimedean point from which those living through a mass psychosis can observe their collective madness. But what causes a mass psychosis? To answer this question, we must first explore what drives an individual mad. While there are many potential triggers of madness, such as an excessive use of drugs or alcohol, brain injuries, and other illnesses, these physical causes will not concern us here. Our concern is with psychological, or what are called psychogenic triggers, as these are the most common culprits of the mass psychosis. The most prevalent psychogenic cause of a psychosis is a flood of negative emotions, such as fear or anxiety, that drives an individual into a state of panic. When in a state of panic, an individual will naturally seek relief, as it is too mentally and physically draining to subsist in this hyper-emotional state. While escaping from the state of panic can be accomplished through adaptive means, such as facing up to and defeating the fear-generating threat, another way to escape is to undergo a psychotic break. A psychotic break is not a descent into a state of greater disorder, as many believe, but a reordering of one's experiential world, which blends fact and fiction, or delusions and reality, in a way that helps end the feelings of panic. Silvano Arrieti, one of the 20th century's foremost authorities on schizophrenia, explains the psychogenic steps that lead to madness. Firstly, there is the phase of panic, when the patient starts to perceive things in a different way, is frightened on account of it, appears confused, and does not know how to explain the strange things that are happening. The next step is what Arrieti calls a phase of psychotic insight, whereby an individual succeeds in putting things together by devising a pathological way of seeing reality which allows him to explain his abnormal experiences. The phenomenon is called insight because the patient finally sees meaning and relations in his experiences. But the insight is psychotic because it is based on delusions, not on adaptive and life-promoting ways of relating to whatever threats precipitated the panic. The delusions, in other words, allow the panic-stricken individual to escape from the flood of negative emotions, but at the cost of losing touch with reality, and for this reason, Arrieti says that a psychotic break can be viewed as an abnormal way of dealing with an extreme state of anxiety. If a panic-triggering flood of negative emotions in a weak and vulnerable individual can trigger a psychotic break, then a mass psychosis can result when a population of weak and vulnerable individuals is driven into a state of panic by threats real, imagined, or fabricated. But as delusions can take many forms, and as madness can manifest in countless ways, the specific manner in which a mass psychosis unfolds will differ based on the historical and cultural context of the infected society. But in the modern era, it is the mass psychosis of totalitarianism that appears to be the greatest threat. Totalitarianism, writes Arthur Versluis, is the modern phenomenon of total centralized state power, coupled with the obliteration of individual human rights. In the totalized state, there are those in power, and there are the objectified masses, the victims. In a totalitarian society, the population is divided into two groups, the rulers and the ruled, and both groups undergo a pathological transformation. The rulers are elevated to an almost godlike status, which is diametrically opposed to our nature as imperfect beings who are easily corrupted by power. The masses, on the other hand, are transformed into the dependent subjects of these pathological rulers and take on a psychologically regressed and childlike status. Hannah Arendt, one of the 20th century's preeminent scholars of this form of rule, called totalitarianism an attempted transformation of human nature itself. But this attempted transformation only turns sound minds into sick minds, for as the Dutch medical doctor who studied the mental effects of living under totalitarianism wrote, "There is in fact much that is comparable between the strange reactions of the citizens of totalitarianism and their culture as a whole, on the one hand, and the reactions of the sick schizophrenic on the other." The social transformation that unfolds under totalitarianism is built upon and sustained by delusions. For only deluded men and women regress to the childlike status of obedient and submissive subjects and hand over complete control of their lives to politicians and bureaucrats. Only a deluded ruling class will believe that they possess the knowledge, wisdom, and acumen to completely control society in a top-down manner. And only when under the spell of delusions would anyone believe that a society composed of power-hungry rulers, on the one hand, and a psychologically regressed population, on the other, will lead to anything other than mass suffering and social ruin. But what triggers the psychosis of totalitarianism? As was explored in the previous video of this series, the mass psychosis of totalitarianism begins in a society's ruling class. The individuals that make up this class, be it politicians, bureaucrats, or crony capitalists, are very prone to delusions that augment their power, and no delusion is more attractive to the power-hungry than the delusion that they can and should control and dominate a society. When a ruling elite becomes possessed by a political ideology of this sort, be it communism, fascism, or technocracy, the next step is to induce a population into accepting their rule by infecting them with the mass psychosis of totalitarianism. This psychosis has been induced many times throughout history, and as Mirlu explains, it is simply a question of reorganizing and manipulating collective feelings in the proper way. The general method by which the members of a ruling elite can accomplish this end is called menticide, with the etymology of this word being a killing of the mind. And as Mirlu further explains, menticide is an old crime against the human mind and spirit, but systematized anew. It is an organized system of psychological intervention and judicial perversion through which a ruling class can imprint their own opportunistic thoughts upon the minds of those they plan to use and destroy. Priming a population for the crime of menticide begins with the sowing of fear. When an individual is flooded with negative emotions, such as fear or anxiety, he or she is very susceptible to a descent into the delusions of madness. Threats, real, imagined, or fabricated, can be used to sow fear, but a particularly effective technique is to use waves of terror. Under this technique, the sowing of fear is staggered with periods of calm. But each of these periods of calm is followed by the manufacturing of an even more intense spell of fear. And on, the process goes. Or as Mirlu writes, each wave of terrorizing creates its effects more easily after a breathing spell than the one that preceded it, because people are still disturbed by their previous experience. Morality becomes lower and lower, and the psychological effects of each new propaganda campaign become stronger. It reaches a public already softened up. While fear primes a population for menticide, the use of propaganda to spread misinformation and to promote confusion with respect to the source of the threats and the nature of the crisis helps to break down the minds of the masses. Government officials and their lackeys in the media can use contradictory reports, nonsensical information, and even blatant lies, as the more they confuse, the less capable will a population be to cope with the crisis and diminish their fear in a rational and adaptive manner. Confusion, in other words, heightens the susceptibility of a descent into the delusions of totalitarianism. Or as Mirlu explains, logic can be met with logic, while illogic cannot. It confuses those who think straight. The big lie and monotonously repeated nonsense have more emotional appeal than logic and reason. While the people are still searching for a reasonable counterargument to the first lie, the totalitarians can assault them with another. Never before in history have such effective means existed to manipulate a society into the psychosis of totalitarianism. Smartphones and social media, television and the internet, all in conjunction with algorithms that quickly censor the flow of unwanted information, allow those in power to easily assault the minds of the masses. What is more, the addictive nature of these technologies means that many people voluntarily subject themselves to the ruling elite's propaganda with a remarkable frequency. Modern technology, explains Mirlu, teaches man to take for granted the world he is looking at. He takes no time to retreat and reflect. Technology lures him on, dropping him into its wheels and movements. No rest, no meditation, no reflection, no conversation. The senses are continually overloaded with stimuli. Man doesn't learn to question his world anymore. The screen offers him answers, ready-made. But there is a further step the would-be totalitarian rulers can take to increase the chance of a totalitarian psychosis. And this is to isolate the victims and to disrupt normal social interactions. When alone and lacking normal interactions with friends, family, and co-workers, an individual becomes far more susceptible to delusions for several reasons. Firstly, they lose contact with the corrective force of the positive example, for not everyone is tricked by the machinations of the ruling elite, and the individuals who see through the propaganda can help free others from the menticidal assault. If, however, isolation is enforced, the power of these positive examples greatly diminishes. But another reason that isolation increases the efficacy of menticide is because, like many other species, human beings are more easily conditioned into new patterns of thought and behavior when isolated. Or as Mirlu explains with regards to the physiologist Ivan Pavlov's work on behavioral conditioning, Pavlov made another significant discovery. The conditioned reflex could be developed most easily in a quiet laboratory with a minimum of disturbing stimuli. Every trainer of animals knows this from his own experience. Isolation and the patient repetition of stimuli are required to tame wild animals. The totalitarians have followed this rule. They know that they can condition their political victims most quickly if they are kept in isolation. Alone, confused, and battered by waves of terror, a population under an attack of menticide descends into a hopeless and vulnerable state. The never-ending stream of propaganda turns minds once capable of rational thought into playhouses of irrational forces. And with chaos swirling around them and within them, the masses crave a return to a more ordered world. The would-be totalitarians can now take the decisive step. They can offer a way out and a return to order in a world that seems to be moving rapidly in the opposite direction. But all this comes at a price. The masses must give up their freedom and cede control of all aspects of life to the ruling elite. They must relinquish their capacity to be self-reliant individuals who are responsible for their own lives and become submissive and obedient subjects. The masses, in other words, must descend into the delusions of the totalitarian psychosis. The totalitarian systems of the 20th century represent a kind of collective psychosis. Whether gradually or suddenly, reason and common human decency are no longer possible in such a system. There is only a pervasive atmosphere of terror and a projection of the enemy, imagined to be in our midst. Thus society turns on itself, urged on by the ruling authorities. But the order of a totalitarian world is a pathological order. By enforcing a strict conformity and requiring a blind obedience from the citizenry, totalitarianism rids the world of the spontaneity that produces many of life's joys and the creativity that drives society forward. The total control of this form of rule, no matter under what name it is branded, be it rule by scientists and doctors, politicians and bureaucrats, or a dictator, breeds stagnation, destruction, and death on a mass scale. And so perhaps the most important question facing the world is how can totalitarianism be prevented? And if a society has been induced into the early stages of this mass psychosis, can the effects be reversed? While one can never be sure of the prognosis of a collective madness, there are steps that can be taken to help effectuate a cure. This task, however, necessitates many different approaches from many different people. For just as the menticidal attack is multi-pronged, so too must be the counterattack. According to Carl Jung, for those of us who wish to help return sanity to an insane world, the first step is to bring order to our own minds and to live in a way that provides inspiration for others to follow. It is not for nothing that our age cries out for the Redeemer personality, for the one who can emancipate himself from the grip of the collective psychosis and save at least his own soul, who lights a beacon of hope for others, proclaiming that here is at least one man who has succeeded in extricating himself from the fatal identity with the group psyche. But assuming one is living in a manner free of the grip of the psychosis, there are further steps that can be taken. Information that counters the propaganda should be spread as far and as wide as possible, for the truth is more powerful than the fiction and falsities peddled by the would-be totalitarian rulers, and so their success is in part contingent on their ability to censor the free flow of information. Another tactic is to use humor and ridicule to delegitimize the ruling elite, or as Mirlu explains, we must learn to treat the demagogue and aspirant dictators in our midst with the weapon of ridicule. The demagogue himself is almost incapable of humor of any sort, and if we treat him with humor, he will begin to collapse. A tactic recommended by Vaclav Havel, a political dissident under Soviet communist rule, who later became president of Czechoslovakia, is the construction of what are called parallel structures. A parallel structure is any form of organization, business, institution, technology, or creative pursuit that exists physically within a totalitarian society, yet morally outside of it. In communist Czechoslovakia, Havel noted that these parallel structures were more effective at combating totalitarianism than political action. Furthermore, when enough parallel structures are created, a second culture, or parallel society, spontaneously forms and functions as an enclave of freedom and sanity within a totalitarian world. Or as Havel explains in his book, The Power of the Powerless. What else are parallel structures than an area where a different life can be lived? A life that is in harmony with its own aims, and which in turn structures itself in harmony with those aims. What else are those initial attempts at social self-organization than the efforts of a certain part of society to rid itself of the self-sustaining aspects of totalitarianism, and thus, to extricate itself radically from its involvement in the totalitarian system? But above all else, what is required to prevent a full descent into the madness of totalitarianism is action by as many people as possible. For just as the ruling elite do not sit around passively, but instead take deliberate steps to increase their power, so too an active and concerted effort must be made to move the world back in the direction of freedom. This can be an immense challenge in a world falling prey to the delusions of totalitarianism, but as Thomas Paine noted, tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph.
So I hope you liked that. I hope you found that to be informative. I did. I'm obviously not going to get to the Soviet life or the Lesser Magistrates book this week, but I will next week. there's a lot going on in the world. Don't live in fear. Push forward. Do what you need to do for your family, for your friends, for your tribe. And come back next week. Remember, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. I'm Hank Reardon. This is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.